The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
You're listening to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Vivian Glass, and we're exploring the considerations around choosing a family pet. I know between us at The Parents Show, at our last count, we've got 4 cats, 2 rabbits, and 3 dogs. And obviously choosing a family pet that will suit your family situation best is a big decision, and it's a huge responsibility. So here to offer her expert guidance on this topic, we're delighted to welcome Kelly Brooks, the Centre Manager of the Hertfordshire Blue Cross Rehoming Centre. Welcome to The Parents Show, Kelly, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. And yeah, it's really exciting. And I've been really looking forward to it because I think you're right, aren't you? Like, pets bring so much to our lives. And it's such a responsibility bringing one into our lives. So it's really thinking about you, your family, and lots of different aspects to really choose the right pet for you and your family. So yeah, totally agree.
And Kelly, for those that might not be familiar with the Rehoming Centre, can you just give us a bit of background about the Blue Cross and specifically about the centre in Hertfordshire?
Yeah, so the Blue Cross is a pet charity and we've been around since 1897, so we've been around quite a long time. The thing that's quite unique about the Blue Cross is that we actually do quite a lot of things. So we rehome multi-species, so we're not just one species. So at my centre here, we rehome cats and dogs. We also then do guinea pigs, rabbits, and then we go down to like mice, gerbils, rats. So it's really multi-species across the whole charity. Blue Cross also provides veterinary treatment for people that are on benefits and live near the hospitals, because we all know how expensive vet bills are nowadays. But also we provide a bereavement support line, and that is run purely by volunteers that have been trained especially for their roles to really help people go through that journey when they lose their pet. So an education, and Blue Cross is very much into behaviour. So it's a charity that really does try and spread their expertise and help across many channels.
And Kelly, can you just describe at the centre itself, can you tell us a bit about where it is, how many animals might you have at any given point?
Well, the first thing I have to say, it's in a beautiful village called Kimpton. So it's absolutely beautiful. And we're really lucky. So the centre had a massive refurb about 4 years ago. So the accommodation that the pets are kept in is really 5-star, which is wonderful for them. So we can house, we have 29 cat pens on site. We also have 2 kennel blocks that can house 20 dogs, and then accommodations for rabbits, guinea pigs and all your other smalls. It's a very spread out centre, so we're over 8 acres. There is amazing places to walk the dogs, but we can also, we do a lot of keeping the dogs like going into like normal areas. So like we would take them into Kimpton, we take them into Harpington, because that's real life for a dog. It isn't being in a rehoming centre. Sorry, that's Ben, my foster cat. And it's about getting the animals that come in through that journey as quickly as possible to be in a home, because no pet should be in a pen. They need to be in a loving home that they 100% deserve. So our role is to help them at the most crucial time in their life to get them that home. It's a wonderful place to work. Obviously, it is very emotional. And we meet the most wonderful people that come here to look for new pets. And we're supported so much by our wonderful volunteers as well. No day is the same. You can come into work and think, right, we're going to do this and that. And you never know who's going to walk through the door or what's going to turn up. But I think the whole thing about working for a pet charity is you've all got that same goal. You love pets and you want to help them. And that's what is an amazing environment to work for, definitely.
And Kelly, when you say that pets come in, I mean, is this the owners that are bringing them in that are perhaps looking to rehome them, or how do the pets come to you?
So there's lots of reasons how pets come here. One is through the actual owners and they bring in their pets for rehoming. But it's never really about that they don't care about their pet. They're actually doing it to do the best by the pet. And I think that's a really good message that people need to understand and really show those people that are going, do you know what? Something has happened in my life, or my life has changed and I cannot provide that animal with what it needs. So rather than keep hold of that pet, they actively look for a charity that can provide and find that home that suits. And I think for those people, I really have real empathy for them, that they're doing the right thing. We deal with, we support other charities. So we do sometimes find ourselves dealing with hoarder homes where people have some animals and it gets out of control and then they don't know where to turn. And then all of a sudden they've got a lot of pets. We deal with people that have found stray pets as well. So cats and smalls, we do that. So there's lots and lots of different places these pets come into. But I always say to my team, as soon as that animal walks through that door, their life is going to change. And it's our responsibility to make sure we do the best by them.
So do you sometimes see some really difficult cases coming into you?
I think, God, it's a very emotional, and everybody's story can be sad, and pets can find themselves in situations which are really not suitable. And I think that's where it really goes about spending that time, because we are very visual, aren't we? Like, you know, you can go somewhere and you'll see a litter of kittens, and they're so gorgeous, and you could make a quick snap decision, I want one. But actually, it's like really putting on that handbrake and going, actually, let me really think about that kitten may live for 20 years. So whatever changes in my life, can I provide that animal with that security? And it's really looking for that information to allow you to decide what is right for your family. Like the Blue Cross website is a great source of information. Just general information about looking after your pet, especially like with smaller pets, your rabbits, your guinea pigs, your mice, thinking about the actual size of the accommodation that they need as well. Like that's so important, and it's getting them the accommodation that is the right size, not what's going to fit into your house. It's whether can you provide that space what that animal needs. So it's really important about, you know, talking to people, talking to the right people, you know, pop into your nearest animal charity, pick up the phone and say, like, me and my family are thinking about this. But overall, it is like the responsibility of thinking about that animal's life. You know, having a dog is great, but when it's winter and it's really dark nights and it's pouring with rain, that dog still needs to go out for a walk, you know? So he's thinking about that side of things as well. And animals bring so much to your life. They really, it's unconditional love, isn't it? You know, they don't wake up in the morning in a bad mood. Like, you know, as I said, I foster now because I lost my old dog. And so I like to foster pets. And to help those animals, to save them being in a pen, and I will go, yeah, I've got space, I can have a cat, and my team will go, right, this cat really is stressed in the cattery environment or is on long-term medical hold. Can you have him? And I'm like, yeah, of course I can. And like for me, it's so rewarding that you're helping that pet at that time as well. And that's why a lot of charities are looking into placing pets into foster homes instead of having them at the centre. It's so less stressful for them. And also, you get a lot out of it as the person being the foster carer as well. So we're always looking for foster carers. So if people feel that they may not want to have a pet full time, but would really like that companionship, or they've got that time on a short-term basis, then I would really encourage them to go down that route of fostering to see whether, you know, it would suit them.
I think that's a really lovely idea as well, Kelly. And, you know, I guess as well, there might be differences in breeds. I know I've always owned dogs. I've had different types of breeds and they come each with their own personality. But there are distinctive differences that you can sort of expect characteristics from certain breeds. Is that something that you can also advise?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's thinking about the characteristics and really like looking at the different breeds. You know, if you looked at the Huskies, say, for instance, Huskies, if they can do hundreds of miles a day, where if you're wanting a dog to go out for a half an hour walk a day, you know instantly that isn't going to be the right pet for you. So again, I would say to people is really work out what they want and what they can give a pet, then cross-reference it to the types of dogs that are out there, and then really look at which one suits, really. And like even like the age of the pet, you know, we have the most wonderful dogs come in that are in their latter years. You know, we know their personality. We know lots about them. And all they want is a home. Well, we can tell you about most dogs, about how often they need to go for walks, how long, what they're like being left. You know, we can really tell you about that personality. And I think that's the thing. When you come to Blue Cross, and it's about that matching process. So if somebody rings up and they've gone on our website and they're saying, say, for instance, Ben, the cat I've got, and they see a picture and they see the profile and they put an application form, then we will call them and go, right, okay, great. How wonderful that you put an application form. Tell me more about what you want from that pet. Because if you want a cat that's a lap cat that spends a lot of time indoors and is by you, but you get a cat that wants to be out all the time hunting and you may see it once a day, you're not going to get what you want out of a pet, you know. So that's why it's about the right home for the pet, but also the right pet for the people. So we spend time talking about your environment, the home you've got to offer. And then we would talk more a lot of Ben. So Ben, really affectionate. He wants to be with you, but he doesn't want to be stroked all the time. So if you want a cat to be on you and you can pick it up, probably Ben wouldn't like that. So it's spending that time talking about it, and then we get you to come in and meet them. So you meet Ben and you see if Ben is the right one for you. If it is, then we arrange for you to take Ben home. Some dogs may need a few visits. So if it's a dog that's come in that we've done some training with, or we really want to go through that stuff and make sure, like, this dog needs that extra support, and can you or do you want to provide that support? Some people come in twice, some people may come in four times. But what that is, it's just making sure you're aware that this pet requires this support. Do you want to do it? If you don't, absolutely fine. We'd rather you say now, but through spending that time, it will be the right match. You'll be happy and the dog will be happy. So that process is all about finding that right match.
And are there any limitations, Kelly? Are there any situations that you think really this is not going to be suitable? This isn't a suitable household for a pet, maybe age or children, or are there any factors that really play out?
Yeah, Blue Cross don't have, as you say, rules. So no, everybody doesn't have to live in a detached house with a 6-foot fence and doesn't work. It's all about that matching process and about finding that right match. What we normally find, if people come in to meet a pet, And through that meet, we know, or they know, well, actually, we don't feel this is the right match. Normally we go, oh, actually, we've got Bob in the kennels that might suit. So we're able then to find a match, because there's so many pets out there that need home. It might not be straight away, but we always try to keep people in mind. So we find them a good match for them. So, yeah. So no limitations. But if we knew a dog was very uncomfortable around children, it would be irresponsible of us to place that dog in that environment, because the children wouldn't be able to interact with the dog, and that pressure on that dog. So it's just finding out, and that's like the assessment process we do with the pet. You know, if we've got a history from the home, that's great, but some that are strays, we need to get to know that pet and place them in that home that they're going to thrive in.
Are there ever situations where there's perhaps severe behavioural problems where you just think, actually, we are not going to be able to find a home for this pet? Are there any real cases like that?
That does happen, and unfortunately, but that is animal welfare, and that is part of working in animal welfare, and it is about being responsible. It isn't placing dogs out into the community that are a risk to humans or other pets. So sometimes you do have to make those hard decisions. And lots of people are involved in making the decision to make sure it's the right decision. Blue Cross doesn't feel it's right for an animal to live in a pen for the rest of its life. And I definitely agree with that. An animal needs to have a quality of life, if that be through health or mental state as well, you know. So yes, we do. It isn't that often, which is great. But I see it that we're being responsible by doing that.
Have you ever had anyone come in looking for a dog and they've gone home with something like a chinchilla or something like that, Kelly?
Well, I think sometimes people have come in with the thought that they would like a certain breed of dog. But actually, sometimes it's funny, because when you actually sit down and talk to people, sometimes most people end up going, God, yeah, maybe a cat would be more suitable for me. Do you know what I mean? So it's about those conversations or that information gathering that allows you to make the best decision, not those quick decisions where you haven't got time to actually think what is the best thing for you and that pet. It's just taking that time. And I think now with the internet, all that information is out there, but it needs to come from a reliable source.
That's fantastic advice. Can you tell us a little bit about the happy stories, about those moments where you've successfully rehomed a pet and you just know this is a match made in heaven?
How long you got? I've got about a million.
Tell us an example, Kelly.
Working in animal welfare for 25 years, and I think every case is special. Every animal is special. And the best thing overall for me is the animals, we become their owners whilst they're here. So they're really into us, and, you know, they need to feel safe and secure, and we provide that. But for me, it's when we rehome, say, a dog, and the owners want to bring the dog back in to see us in 2 months' time. And the dog comes in and they look at us and they're like, who are you? No, this is my mum and dad now. And I love them. And for me, it's that journey of we help them at their time of need. But to see that lovely family unit where the people absolutely adore the animal and that animal will have all what it needs for the rest of its life, that is the most special thing to me, because our job is done, if you know what I mean. And as soon as an animal goes, there's another one coming in. And our focus then needs to move on to the next job, because we are the professionals within animal welfare. But there's, honestly, there's loads. But I just literally have to walk past. And even today, I saw two of my girls walking a couple of dogs together. And these dogs have only just come in and they were quite stressed, first of all. And then they're running up the hill with the girls. And, you know, it's just that journey. And I know those, my team, are passionate, dedicated, and they will do everything they can to help that pet find themselves that home.
And I think you've talked, Kelly, about what the sort of considerations are in terms of the kind of accommodation,
yeah,
the space that you'd need for a pet,
the, yeah,
sort of,
and the time
commitment, and, yeah, I guess the financial commitment as well is no small feat.
Yeah, it's huge now, the financial commitment. And I think the number one thing is to really sit down and work that out. And 100% is your pet's insurance. So when your animal is unwell, because we get unwell and there's no NHS for animals and they deserve and they should go to the vets, that you can provide that for them. And there's lots of policies out there, and it's just choosing the one that's right for you and registering. Like, even before you get the pet, contact your local vets, find out like what the cost is and things like for your yearly vaccinations, look at the food. But they are expensive to have, you know, and they get poorly like we do. So it's really thinking about that side as well.
We mentioned sometimes circumstances change. You know, it can be people's own health or their financial circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
If somebody is finding themselves in a pickle, mm-hmm, for whatever reason, what can they do, Kelly, to try and find out about potentially rehoming their pet or other help and support that might be available for them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say don't feel embarrassed about ringing. We're non-judgmental. We're here to help. And even by helping somebody and keeping that pet in the home, we've done something to help. So I would say go onto the Blue Cross website, see if you can get any answers from there. If you can't, pick up the phone and give us a bell. And then we can advise or signpost you to what you need. Again, yes, if you decide after you gathered all the right information that you want to rehome, then we can talk through the rehoming process to you. Blue Cross do a great scheme as well. It's called Home Direct. So some people that need to part with their pets, but they really don't want their pet coming into a rehoming centre, they can keep hold of that pet. And then what we do, we assess that pet, put it up for homing, and then we find a good match, and then the new people and the pet meet. And then if everything goes okay, that animal goes from one home straight into the other, so it doesn't have to stay in a pen overnight. So there's lots of different ways and lots of schemes there to help people in that time of that process, because it's a bereavement. You're still parting with something, and it's tough. It really is. But I think if you have confidence in the charity that you're using, the information that we're asking you about your pet, you'll know that that's going to be shared with the new owners.
Yeah, and I can only imagine. I mean, I certainly know in our family, our pets are part of the family.
and that's such a real tough
choice if somebody has to make that. So thank you for sharing some information. We mentioned about the centre itself. Is it somewhere where you can drop in? Is it a kind of open access for people?
Yeah, we have reception open. It's 11 to 4 every day except for Wednesday. We don't have people walking around the site. And that's a great question. Thank you for asking me that. Because animals find a rehoming centre quite stressful. So, but we become their family. So I can walk around here and I will not even hear a dog bark, because the dog knows they're never going to come across a stranger. So they feel a little bit more less stressed in this sort of environment. Now, if a dog or the cats, you know, have lots of people just walking about staring at them, it can put that added pressure and stress onto them. And what does that achieve for the pet? You know, so this way where people apply for the pets and we arrange an appointment and we're like, right, you're going to meet somebody now, and the dog knows that, it's prepared and it's a lot more structured and goes better. So please pop into reception on those hours. Please do. We got touch screens in there so we can go through about the pets that are looking for homes. We can give you general advice and information and share our knowledge with you. And you can actually apply for pets here as well, but not to walk around. And I think when people really understand the reason for that, people are like, yeah, why would you? Why would you want to put that extra layer of stress? I always remember years ago going to rescue places, and you'd be able to walk through the kennel block and the dogs would be going barking, you know, where now I can't hear the dogs here even bark.
So people can drop in for advice, for information, but they're not going to walk in. They're not going to see that little furry face and fall in on the spot, which sounds actually like a really responsible and sensible mechanism for the rehoming
process. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, our role and our responsibility is to get that animal into that home as soon as we possibly can.
Kelly, thank you so much for sharing all your expertise. Kelly, if people want to support the Blue Cross, are there ways that they can actually offer their support as well?
Absolutely. And people can support in many different ways. It can be financial, which is amazing. It can be becoming a volunteer. It can be rehoming a pet. And it can be things like giving us towels and, you know, bedding for the animals or treats. So I would go on the Blue Cross website. So put that in any search engine and the Blue Cross will come up. Lots of information on there. Or contact your local rehoming centre.
And of course, I think I'm correct in saying there's some Blue Cross charity shops as well. Is that correct? In and around, certainly there's one in Harpenden, but...
Yeah, Harpenden. The Harpenden shop is amazing. I go in there a lot, yes. It's just lots of different ways to support the charity. And, you know, as I said, I've worked for the Blue Cross for 25 years, but it really is an amazing charity. It really is.
So best thing, if people want to get in touch, can you give us the website address of what they should look up?
Yeah, so it's www.bluecross.org.uk. And then our email here is hertfordshire@bluecross.org.uk.
Fantastic. Kelly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me. And yeah, if I can be of any more assistance, then please do help. But my question to you is, pets are amazing. They give us so much, and we're so lucky to have them as pets, but they deserve for us to do our homework prior.
I 100% agree with that, Kelly. And it's been a real joy to speak to you today. Thanks for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you so much.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Parents Show here on Mix 92.6. I'm Dave Neal. Please be advised that this radio interview may contain discussions related to sensitive topics, including mental health challenges. Listener discretion is advised. And if you or someone you know is struggling with these issues, please consider seeking support from a mental health professional or a helpline, such as the Samaritans, who can be reached on 116 123.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Nikki Cantura, who is a counsellor who specialises in maternal mental health. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show today. It's lovely, lovely to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do and about yourself?
Yeah. So I'd say firstly, I am a mum, but I'm also a counsellor. As you said, I support mums who are struggling with anxiety, depression and the challenges of motherhood. So my work focuses on helping mums manage the mental load, build confidence and find a sense of balance in their lives. I personally experience postnatal anxiety, so I understand the feelings of sort of second guessing everything, especially at such a challenging time in your life. So with this personal journey, I've kind of, my empathy's deepened and my commitment to supporting other mothers facing similar struggles has sort of strengthened, and I'm really passionate about it. Obviously, motherhood is really, really rewarding, but it can be really isolating, overwhelming and exhausting. So I'm really passionate about helping mums prioritise their mental well-being, because when we can take care of ourselves, we're really just better equipped to take care of our kids and family.
I couldn't agree more. And that's why we were really looking forward to talking to you on the Parents Show today, because it is absolutely, it's the Parents Show and it's about helping us be good parents. But we can't mind our kids if we're not in good shape ourselves.
I always use that analogy of the oxygen mask, you know, on the aeroplane. If you don't, you need to put your own oxygen mask first before you can put on someone else's.
Yeah, that's wise, wise advice. Absolutely. So let's talk about anxiety and mothers. What exactly is it? How can it present itself? And what signs should mums be looking out for?
Okay, yeah, definitely. So anxiety is obviously a natural response to stress. There's the flight, fight, freeze that we all know about, which we need to survive as humans. But for many mums, it can become persistent and overwhelming. And that's just when it gets too much. So different ways it can present itself is sort of constant worrying. So especially about your child's health and their safety and their future. Feeling on edge and struggling to switch off even when things are calm. Sleep difficulties as well. So either struggling to fall asleep or wake up with racing thoughts. Physical symptoms as well. So headaches, stomach aches or a racing heart. And I think a big thing as well is overthinking and guilt. So feeling like you're not doing enough or failing as a mum, which I think is a huge thing for most mums anyway. You feel like you can never get it right.
Absolutely. I'd say there's so many listeners nodding away there. And it's interesting that you've included overthinking in it. That's not something I would have associated with. That's really interesting.
Yeah, you can get caught in this cycle of thoughts and sort of catastrophizing. I don't know if you know that word, but almost like thinking of what the worst that could happen. It may start as a tiny thing, but it goes into what ifs, what ifs, what ifs. So yeah, it definitely can be a sign of feeling anxious.
That's great to know, and brilliant tips about what to look out for. So how do we know if anxiety has tipped over into depression? Or I don't know in which order they work. Does it go from anxiety to depression? Are they, or how does it work?
Yeah, so it can go anxiety, depression. It can go depression, anxiety, or you can have either on their own without the other. So they are sort of distinct conditions. Anxiety tends to be more about excessive worry and feeling on edge, whereas depression feels more like being drained and really emotionally shut down. So some of the signs of depression are persistent low mood. So you're feeling sad and hopeless and numb on most days. You've got a loss of interest in things, so you're just not really enjoying things like you used to. Exhaustion as well, struggling to get out of bed or feeling drained all the time. And withdrawing, so avoiding friends, family or daily activities. And also feeling worthless or guilty, so a constant sense of not being good enough, which again, I think is a common thing for mums. Definitely that mum guilt is there for most of us, I think. So if those symptoms last for more than a couple of weeks and start affecting daily life, it's really important to seek help. And you should contact your GP, first of all, but you can also look for a therapist or a support group. Also, if you're in the early stages of motherhood, you might be able to get support from your local NHS perinatal mental health team as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So you could just reach out to them.
You can self-refer to them. Yeah. Yeah, so if there's one locally, that you should be able to self-refer to them or go through your GP.
Brilliant. If you're seeing any of those symptoms.
Yeah.
So sleep is a recurrent theme in what you're mentioning there, Nikki, isn't it? It seems like a bit of a red flag.
Yeah. Trouble sleeping. Obviously, we know as a mum and a new mum, you have trouble sleeping and you're exhausting all the time anyway. So I guess it's just recognising any differences, really, and if you can't get to sleep, and with those racing thoughts as well, so that kind of overthinking as well.
That's what sets it aside. Yeah. And of course, I mean, being exhausted as a mum and not sleeping properly as a mum is pretty, but you know yourself, right? And you know you pre-children.
Yeah.
So it's important to just remember what you were like and then you can see the difference between how your mood has changed.
And those around you would probably see a difference as well. And, you know, that you could ask them, or hopefully they would bring it up with you as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. So I mean, it's hard being a new mum to even get 5 minutes to yourself.
Yeah.
So I wonder, do you have any tricks for us, Nikki, about how to pay attention to ourselves in order for us to be the best parents that can be? Like, how do we become a bit more self-aware of our mental health? Can you help us steer parents in that direction?
Yeah. I'm not sure I'd say tricks because that feels a bit like magic. I don't want to promise anything. But yeah, so it's a really important question. Mums are constantly juggling responsibilities and it's so easy to neglect our own well-being, like we were saying earlier. So self-awareness means checking in with yourself and noticing when something isn't right. So some ways you can do this are, first of all, recognising changes. So are you more irritable, overwhelmed or tearful than usual? Check in with your feelings as well. Ask yourself, how am I really doing today? Like, and maybe naming those feelings that you're feeling as well. And noticing physical signs as well. So tension, headaches, trouble sleeping or stomach issues can all be related to anxiety as well. You could try journaling or voice noting your thoughts. So that can help you track patterns in your emotions. And really, really important is talking about it, whether it's with a friend, your partner or a professional. Saying things out loud can really be a huge relief. And I think that can be a bit scary at first, definitely. And you're like, oh, I'm missing something's wrong. Or, but it's only going to help you. Definitely. That, in my experience, it's only going to help. So, and then taking those small steps to check in with yourself can prevent things from escalating.
That's wonderful. I mean, the idea of using voice notes, I have to say, I never thought it. And that might be a good first step. If you're too scared to actually talk to somebody else,
yeah,
just hearing yourself say the words in a voice note might be a great way to start. You're heard, you're not judged.
Exactly. Or writing it down as well. Yeah, just so it's out your head a little bit. It works for doing that as well.
That's a brilliant tip. I'm not going to say trick. And what does, can you describe self-care for us? Can you tell us what it looks like?
Yeah. So, you know, it isn't just bubble baths or spa days, which of course they're amazing, but it's about looking after yourself in a way that feels manageable and sustainable. So it could be physical care. So eating well, getting fresh air and moving your body, emotional care as well. So setting boundaries, allowing yourself to rest and speaking to yourself with kindness. Mental care, so reducing overwhelm by planning ahead or delegating tasks to other people. And sort of the social side as well, so making time to connect with people who lift you up. So it doesn't have to take hours, even just 5 to 10 minutes a day of stretching or meditation or deep breathing or just even a cup of tea can really help.
Brilliant. And I want to bring you back to the setting boundaries. What can that look like? Boundaries with people, with things?
Well, both, I guess. I guess a big thing is within relationships. So with your partner, if you need extra help, like, can you bath the kids tonight? Can you tidy up after dinner tonight? Just things like that. But also, you know, if you're invited out for the evening and you're just too exhausted, being okay with just saying no. And that's okay to say no. It's not a bad thing. It's protecting yourself and your needs. Yeah, so it's with relationships and, yeah, I guess boundaries with yourself, maybe, like if you've committed yourself to so many things, even like baby groups and play groups, and it's just all too much, going, actually, no, because this isn't helping me and therefore it's not helping your child. So I'm just going to stay and look after myself and do what's good for me at the moment.
That makes so much sense. And I think it's probably quite easy to slip into that because there's so much pressure on us to make sure that soon as baby is born, that you're spinning 20 plates doing, you know, baby yoga, baby, you know, baby rhyme time.
There's so many things, aren't there?
There's so many activities that you could be doing. And of course, a few or a couple are great, but there's so much out there on offer. You have to discern a bit, don't you? And protect yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really, really helpful, Nikki, like kind of scoping out what it can look like, because quite often, I suppose, it's good to bed down, protect yourself a little bit, heal a little bit, and then take time to reflect on how you're feeling. Because if you're running around all the time, you don't get the chance to do that.
No. And especially after you've just had a baby, it's a huge, huge thing. And, you know, whether it's a natural birth or a C-section, you know, it's a huge trauma giving birth to a child. And then your life changes and you might have left a career or, you know, your relationship changes. So trying to put all that into perspective, as well as starting the new life, you know, it's good to go out and meet people and have that social life. But I guess it's finding that balance. But putting yourself first. It's not selfish.
Brilliant. And I love what you're saying. You're not saying don't do it. You're just saying be selective, be nuanced and a little bit, but not don't overdo it.
Yeah, I mean, it's down to you. If you feel like you can do a class every day for a week and that you're fine, then great. But don't feel bad for not doing it or cancelling plans at the last minute or anything. It's looking after yourself is so important.
Brilliant, Nikki. Thank you. So what are you seeing with your clients that other parents can look out for so that you kind of catch anxiety before it goes too far?
Mm. So some of the common warning signs that anxiety might be escalating are so feeling overwhelmed by even the smallest tasks, overanalyzing every decision, even minor ones, avoiding social situations or withdrawing from friends and family, feeling like you're constantly failing as a mum no matter how much you do, and physical symptoms like I talked about before, so tension, headaches, nausea, racing heart. So if you notice any of those signs in yourself or a loved one, it's important to act early and get that help.
Does it make a difference if you nip it in the bud, so to say, Nikki?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. The earlier it's addressed, the easier it is to manage. So small changes like getting enough rest, which I know isn't easy, but as much as you can, reaching out for support and setting realistic expectations for yourself and other people can really make a big difference. If we let the anxiety build up, it can lead to burnout or more serious mental health challenges. So, and seeking help early isn't a sign of weakness at all. It's completely a sign of strength and self-awareness. I think people can see it as a sign of weakness, or they're scared what people might say, but it's acknowledging that you're struggling with something and going through something is such a huge strength.
That's I think that'll really resonate with parents, and it's a great bit of advice. And I like the idea that you're telling parents to reach out, ask for help, even if it means, like you said with your husband, okay, can you make the dinner tonight, or your partner, or,
yeah,
you know, if your partner's got a busy period at work, to get your mum or your mum-in-law to come in and just take the pressure off you. There's no shame in asking for a hand.
Not at all. No. I know that's not always the case. I do have clients who have no help, you know, locally. But yeah, as much as you can. Friends, you know, that maybe have older kids or don't have kids could be able to help, or yeah, just any way you can get support is really important.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nikki. So if mums are listening in now and any of this is sounding familiar, or if it's resonating with them and they feel like perhaps there is anxiety creeping in or mood levels are dipping, what, remind them and tell them what you think that they should do.
Okay. Firstly, just know that you're not alone. Lots of people go through this, and like we've said before, you're definitely not failing, and there is plenty of support available. So firstly, it's important to acknowledge how you feel and to admit that you're struggling, and that's okay. And then secondly, talk to someone, and as I said before, you should really speak to your GP in the first instance. I know that mindset might sound a bit scary and some people a bit worried about that, but it's, you know, it's your mental health, it is health. So, you know, having a qualified medical professional is important to have them involved.
And they'll be happy that you call up and kind of go, you know what,
100%.
It's been 3-4 weeks now of me just not feeling like myself.
Mm.
And they, I mean, obviously they'll be delighted the earlier you come in,
yeah,
the more constructive the help will be.
Definitely. And try and prioritise those small acts of self-care, even just 5 minutes, like I was saying earlier. Consider professional support if you're thinking about that. So maybe a counsellor or joining a support group, that can be really helpful. And this is a really big one for me that I talk to my clients about a lot, but I struggle to do as well. But it's about being kind to yourself. So try not to beat yourself up and try to talk to yourself as if you were talking to a friend going through that, because you're doing your best and motherhood's really, really tough. So basically, if your anxiety or low mood is affecting your daily life, please don't wait. Reach out to your GP or mental health professional for guidance.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nikki. And those little acts of kindness, what can they look like?
Well, I think it's being kind to yourself. So if you're feeling you can't cope and you're beating yourself up, like I should, like the should word's a big one for me as well. Like, who's saying you should be able to do anything? But I should be able to be the best mum that I can, or I should. It's just I am doing my best. I'm doing the best with what I've got in this situation. This is a really hard time. Yeah, it's thinking how you'd speak to a friend and more compassionately and empathetically, whereas often you talk to yourself like, oh God, why can't I do this? I should be able to do this. You know, every other person can do it, which isn't necessarily true, but you find yourself comparing yourself to other people, don't you?
Unfortunately, yeah. It seems to be a part of becoming a mum. You suddenly feel judged and compared to every other mother out there.
Yeah.
And there's so much on social media, on television about perfect moms and perfect motherhood, yeah, that the pressure is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. I think, yeah, even that social media thing, I think I've had clients who've kind of gone down that rabbit hole of looking at the perfect mums, which we know isn't true because it's all curated, but then they beat themselves up. So it's, yeah, just looking at what's best for you and your family and your child, you know, and that's okay. You're doing what you can, and that's amazing.
Brilliant, Nikki. Thanks so much. So listen, if listeners want to get in touch with you as a counsellor, because obviously you're local, which is fantastic, but you're also online.
Yeah.
How would they get in touch with you?
So my email is Kantura Nikki. So it's KanturaNicky@gmail.com. And I've also got a website, which is nikkikantura.co.uk. And you can contact me through there as well.
And of course, it's important to say there are lots of counsellors out there, lots of therapists, and it's important to find the right fit for you.
100%. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm the right person for anybody, everybody. It's the relationship with your counsellor is the most important thing. But yeah, if you'd even like to just have a little chat, and if you're thinking about counselling, that's absolutely fine. You can contact me.
That's brilliant, Nikki. So many great tips and wonderful advice for new mums out there to kind of navigate probably the bumpiest period of their lives.
It's really tough.
It is indeed. But with great advice like that, it definitely helps navigate it that bit easier. Thanks for joining us on the Parents
Show. Thanks so much.
As we've mentioned, if you or someone you know is struggling with these issues, please consider seeking support from a mental health professional or a helpline, such as the Samaritans, who can be reached on 116 123.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.